Baseball season is back. The 2017 season is finally underway, and no better way to celebrate than with Out of the Park Baseball 18 and MLB Manager 2017. Both of those games help bring you this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast. Hey everybody, Rich Grisham here. We are so excited at Out of the Park Developments for our two new baseball games. You guys probably know all about Out of the Park Baseball 18. If you don't, well, why not? It's the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year. This year's game has a whole bunch of cool new features, including a new challenge mode so you can battle against your friends. It includes the addition for the first time ever in any game, the addition of the Historic Negro League, so you can take all those great players from the past and have them compete with or against the major leaguers of their time or before or afterwards. It's got a great updated 3D engine, which allows the gameplay itself to unfold in a really cool, nifty way. And it's got highlight reels now, which are completely new, and just so much more stuff. And you guys also probably know that you can play any team, any season, major league or minor leagues, from the late 1870s through 2017, including the latest rosters from opening day 2017. It's unbelievable. And MLB Manager lets you take Out of the Park Baseball with you anywhere you go on your phone or your iPad, or either iPhone or Android device or the iPad. MLB Manager is only $4.99. It's got a brand new visual look and feel. It's got the 2017 season. It's got three historic past seasons, 1927, 1948, or 1997. And you can get any other season you want for just 99 cents. You can get 10 for $5, or every season dating back to 1901 for just $19.99. MLB Manager 2017 available now for $4.99 on the Apple iTunes Store or the Android Store, Google Play. And Out of the Park Baseball 18 available through our website. And if you use the code PRESS18, we'll give you an extra 10% off. And you get it through Steam as well. Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, proudly bringing you this week's episode of the Press Row Podcast. Enjoy the show.
Well, hey, we finally made it. After months of anticipation, MLB The Show 17 has released. We'll be doing a full panel review roundtable next week where we break down pretty much everything you can imagine about the game. But in the meantime, we wanted to get out in front of that and discuss our first impressions and experiences with the game. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Weedy, Pasta Padre, and with me is the usual duo of Rich Grisham and TJ Lowerman. Let me start with you, TJ, this time.
Sure. Dynamic duo, if you will.
I wouldn't go that far, but okay. Right. What, you know, tell me, you got MLB The Show 17. What have you gotten into? What has been your kind of overall experience with the game so far?
Well, obviously, I ripped like 150 Diamond Dynasty packs. Mm. I shaved myself a mustache and then created a Diamond Dynasty player to match. And I've just been fighting with trying to connect to servers mm-hmm. the last few days for the most part.
How about you, Rich? What have you done so far with MLB?
I have dabbled with A Little Road to the Show, and I have jumped headfirst into a franchise with the Mets.
All right. So MLB The Show as a franchise is really, it's one of the most consistent sports gaming franchises, if not the most consistent in all of sports gaming. And it's also, I would say, a little predictable. And they mixed that up a little bit this year, doing things that are maybe outside the comfort zone we've seen this generation. What has stood out to you the most from the game so far, TJ, in a positive way?
I was actually really surprised to like what's going on with the presentation, specifically the new commentary and stuff. Usually I'll just mute that. Pretty quickly, but I actually find myself listening to it this year. Again, okay. It's only like 3 days in, so I have not just decided, okay, I'm putting the headphones on and going to listen to something else, but okay, it's keeping my interest now.
Yeah, so we've got two new voices in the booth, and you know, my observation of the commentary so far has been it's you can tell that the trio didn't record together. It's just the audio levels are a little different. And the new individuals repeat lines a little too often. Maybe there's a few things they say that are completely irrelevant or inaccurate. But yeah, I agree that just having the new voices does something, even though the commentary isn't like dramatically different. It feels newer, and that's important in a series that's gone so long without really any dramatic changes in commentary. In addition to presentation there, TJ, what do you think of the MLB Network package so far?
So far, so good. I haven't seen any of the show track stuff pop up in a game that I've played yet. But I mean, I like the menu, like the scoreboards and stuff that show up during the game, and how the lineup screen looks and stuff. Good stuff.
What do you think, Rich? As far as presentation goes, what have you noticed so far?
It looks beautiful, as always. And the MLB Network, you know, the multiple themes is very cool. I like that, too. It definitely gives it a interesting feel. For example, opening day, Mets Braves, MLB Network. Day two, not the MLB Network. And it's not a dramatic shift, but it's a subtle change. But it's realistic because that's how baseball is, baseball broadcast. So I really thought that was cool. Not going to say that I spent a lot of time listening to commentary, because I don't, because as we've talked about, commentary doesn't really matter to me. And I realize that puts me in the vast minority, and that's cool. But you know, there's nothing to really break down with commentary, since it's not a thing that I really, really care about.
And TJ, for me at least, one of the biggest things presentation-wise is that we actually get presentation in the Diamond Dynasty games now, which, as you know, or at least with Online Franchise and with Diamond Dynasty, we've played dramatic games where they just cut off and you get none of the celebrations, you get none of the emotion coming through because they cut out all the presentation. And so that's one of the best things, I think, best changes they've made this year, is that you can actually have presentation in those Diamond Dynasty games.
Yeah, I like that there. But also in Road to the Show, I was playing those first games and I'm like, oh, right, this doesn't have the MLB Network presentation package. So I feel like specifically in Road to the Show, when you do get to those games where there's going to be the MLB Network presentation, they're just going to feel even that much more special.
Yeah, absolutely. So you bring up Road to the Show. Let's talk a little bit about that. This year, Road to the Show got story-like elements added to it, kind of in a documentary style. It's not quite the story mode that you see in NBA 2K or that you saw introduced in FIFA this year, but they layered on something there that had been missing completely from Road to the Show, which was very much a mode that was just based on whatever story you made up in your head based on how well you were performing and when you were moving up and when you were had your role with the team change and when you blew a game or when you won the game. You kind of had to craft that narrative yourself. Road to the Show is walking you through now kind of the journey of a player that begins in the minors, begins in the minors, and then moves their way up. Adding things like, for me, as a reliever, I got asked to become a starter, and you can react to those kind of things in different ways. And it brings a new dynamic into Road to the Show, though it's not really, again, an enriching story that you're playing through necessarily. Rich, how much of Road to the Show have you really gotten into, and what do you think of what the changes they've made so far?
I've played some of it, and I like it, and I like the fact that they're doing something different, and the narration and the showing the player hanging around the locker room or sitting around, you know, waiting for different things or chatting on the phone, and while his story is sort of being told, and then you're able to at certain points in time, like you said, respond in certain ways. It's, you know, it's interesting because it's very similar with the dialogue choices to something like a Mass Effect. But it doesn't have the same impact that it sort of does in the Mass Effect games, in that you don't really know what you're doing by saying the things that you're saying, whether you're being, you know, if you're being a hotshot or if you're being humble.
Or if it matters.
Or if it matters, that's my point. Exactly. Yeah. So But, you know, I like it. And I like it mostly because it's they're trying something different. And I really applaud that. We've been talking for years how Road to the Show has not had any changes of significance. And so it's cool. I totally understand how people won't like it as well, right? Like, it's not for everyone. It can be a bit, I could see how somebody would see it as a bit strange. You know, it's sort of this narration over the guy. You're sort of in the story, but you're sort of not.
Yeah, you and don't some speak. Yeah.
Right. Some of the cutscenes don't work particularly well. They just don't look good. They look a little awkward. You know, you can tell that this isn't a Mass Effect or a, you know, a AAA game with that has multiple dozens of people working on cutscenes for a month at a time. You know, they can be a little rough and a little wonky. But overall, I'm cool with it. Again, I know over the long term, is it going to matter? Is it going to pull me into Road to the Show? Probably not. Not because of anything it's not doing, but just because I love the franchise mode so much.
And I look back to when they introduced the year-to-year saves, and ever since then I've said they probably backed themselves into a corner a little bit with those year-to-year saves, because they cannot do just a wild, dramatic change fundamentally to Road to the Show or franchise mode, because they need the ability for those files from the previous year to transfer to the new one, and then have the new features still work with the older saves. And so you're not going to find Road to the Show as a purely story mode like you see in some of the other games, and that's okay. But I think that's probably why you see something like this, where, like I said, they kind of layered it on top of what already is there, and it really doesn't change what was there before it.
In their developer stream, when they talked about Road to the Show, they said, yes, your saves will still come over and everything, mm-hmm. But you're going to be missing out on a lot of the stuff. So they pretty much made it clear that you should start fresh with this one.
That's the weird thing about having year-to-year saves, is the idea is to get you, because you're investing so much time in a franchise mode or whatever. Like TJ, you could play your 162, or Rich, you play your 162, and it takes just 6-8 months to do it. And then you could conceivably, in the next game, continue from there. But I never really thought that was that interesting a scenario to me, because I want to start over and utilize all the brand new features that they put in from the start. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who would prefer just to continue and get whatever benefits new that they can. But for me, it didn't really strike me as something that I would really utilize.
Well, the ability to bring stuff forward is vital, in my opinion, to a certain group of fans who have invested lots of time. I'm with you, Brian, in that I played a full franchise season last year, and after the World Series, I didn't move forward, and I could easily see, and there's nothing stopping me from importing that into this year's game and picking it up where I left off. But I also, similar to you, I like to just sort of start fresh with the new game and see how that impacts it. But I totally understand both. And in fact, you know, we know that there are a lot of people who do really like the bringing your character forward, or your franchise forward. It means a lot to people. So, but that's okay. I'm totally cool with the fact that they're like, well, to experience the new stuff, you got to start a new mode, right? Or a new game. And I think it also, as we've talked about, there may be something new that they introduce in the future that isn't tied to any existing modes. Like, it could be one of those, as we sort of bandied about, like maybe just a quick 2-hour true story mode where you're not necessarily grinding through seasons, but maybe, you know, there's key moments or something like that that just is a completely new departure that goes off in a different direction. So that's the other thing. I mean, Road to the Show ultimately is what it is. And while they can make certain improvements and tweaks to it, ultimately it's just the single player version of playing a franchise. There's only so many different directions you could even take it year to year, and only so many directions you even would want to. Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. We're going to take just a moment to thank one of our sponsors tonight. It is Blue Apron. You guys know Blue Apron. They have sponsored our show a number of times, and they're terrific. I mean, they have incredible home cooking available, and it's never been more attainable thanks to Blue Apron, because for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers easy-to-follow seasonal recipes along with the right pre-proportioned ingredients right to your door. You know, you get no more overspending at restaurants or high-end grocery stores. With Blue Apron, you can prepare delicious, memorable meals yourself in under 40 minutes. You know, not to mention, Blue Apron has partnered with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States to ensure that all their ingredients are of the highest quality. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of ingredients required, they're actually reducing food waste. And here's the bottom line is it's delicious, quality food that you can feel good about. I've used it myself. My family and I have cooked. My son and I have cooked some stuff. I'm not a cook, but they made it, I don't want to say they made it easy, but they made it enjoyable to produce a quality meal. They made it easy with the fact that they give you exactly what you need, but it's still cooking, and that's actually kind of a cool thing. So, you know, some of the meals that are available in March include salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, or spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. This is legitimately good stuff. So check out this weekend's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/pressrow. So again, blueapron.com/pressrow. That is how you will get yourself a delicious set of Blue Apron meals, three of them free with free shipping, and you will also help the Press Row podcast. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. I've used it. It's really good. Trust me on this one. That is blueapron.com/pressrow. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
As we talked about there, the time commitment and ability to roll over saves and everything, and the features they've introduced in recent years have been designed to alleviate some of that pressure of the time crunch that it becomes with franchise features that allow you to simulate in different ways as far as things like quick counts, which drop you into deeper counts, or player lock, Rich, which you like to use a lot. And this year, pretty much the only stuff they did with franchise mode was to put in even more options as far as ways to not play the games or to jump in at certain critical points. It's not quite the same as what you got in Madden, where it would drop you into the game multiple times. It'll drop you into the game at one point, potentially, when there's an important situation, whether it's a statistical milestone, or you're trying to close out the game, or you have an opportunity to win the game late. And what that turns out to be is kind of almost just like a ninth inning mode, where you're, in most cases, that's where you're gonna find that you're needed. But they continue to produce these features, and it's not just the show, it's all sports games, it seems like now. Features on way to get through games faster, features for ways to get through seasons faster. Rich, are you utilizing any of the new simulation options that they put into franchise?
Well, I'm using the one that I invented myself, which they made even easier to do, because I don't know if you know, well, I'm sure you did, Brian, right on the front page now, mm-hmm. in franchise mode is player lock. So instead of last year and the year before, where you'd have to start the game, and then when you get to the lineup card, then you hit the right trigger to do the player lock, and you got to forget, or you better hope you don't forget so you don't go backwards and all sorts of different stuff. Now you just right from the main menu, hit player lock, boom, you pick your player, and then you're in the game, and it's awesome. And that just makes what I do, which is player lock on typically Ioannis Cespedes, although in the past I have sometimes rotated around. I'd be Lucas Duda or somebody like that. But I like to, when I player lock, to be the same hitter more often than not, because I feel like I'm contributing to that player's success or not lack of success. Mm. Although if Noah Syndergaard is pitching, I kind of like pitching with him, so sometimes I'll player lock with him. Either way, doing that for a 5, 6, 7 innings player lock in over the course of 2 or 3 minutes and opening it up to play as the full team for the rest of the game continues to be a spectacular way to play MLB The Show, and they've made it even easier this year. And because of that, I haven't had to use the new I've thought about it, but again, it's that weird problem that I have where when a certain way that I play the game I already enjoy so much, I can't stop doing that, yeah. For lack of a better description.
Yeah, well, we'll get more into franchise, I think, here coming up. I haven't had a whole lot of time myself to dig into it and those new options, because again, they don't really appeal to me. But I understand, and like I said, it's the case with all sports game franchises, really, outside of maybe FIFA, is that the games just take a long time to complete, and they surely get feedback from a lot of consumers that say, I can't commit an hour to play a game, or I can't commit 35 minutes to play a game, and I can't commit to 162 games a season.
Then, you know, you still got playoffs and hopefully World Series, so that adds another 8, that's 10, true. 12 to it.
Yeah, that's true. So
there's a lot, but you're right. Consumers want to play games in a lot of different ways. A lot of different ways. Not only do people want shorter, but people also desperately want sim. And that's why the regular games take so long, because to be a sim game, you got to have a lot going on. And when you've got a lot going on, that means a game can take 45 minutes or an hour. So they have to balance the desires of a lot of different people who want a lot of different things. And it's impressive for the most part how they've done that.
Yeah. And at the same time, what they have to try and balance is, and you've seen it with the other options that they've had in there for a couple of years now, as far as quick counts and player lock, is that they want to give you the opportunity still to simulate, but influence, instead of just simulating away and seeing what happens, feeling like you actually have an impact on the outcomes. And that's what they got in mind. We'll just have to see if those hold up as we go forward. Let's talk a little bit about then gameplay. Obviously, gameplay has really been the strength of the show, outside of a few frustrating issues that have come along and either been addressed or lingered. And I want to talk to TJ about some of the ones that we struggled with over the years, and whether you think it's been dealt with properly this year. So how about bunting?
Problem is I haven't played a bunch of online games because of these servers, so right. I don't really know if bunting is any better.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I would say, based on just offline games, when I've tried to bunt, hasn't been as effective. Tend to bunt harder to charging infielders, and they get you at first. But you're right, a lot of it's going to depend on reaction online and stuff. I've only gotten a few online games in. Haven't had to face anybody doing that yet.
But they also changed. The bunting online is completely different from the offline bunting now.
Okay.
So now if you're like, if your bunt rating is like sub 50-something, I think, and you bunt online, you just automatically bunt it directly at a player.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Stop that from happening.
Yeah, that's at least a positive. We'll see how that turns out. Because it was very frustrating to go up against teams that just bunted all the time. It wasn't even just the fast players, because you could at least prepare for them. It was the mediocre speed players who you would, you know, you had no reason to think, oh, they're just going to bunt here for a base hit, and they do.
Or guys that you put the shift on, and they just bunt and have no problem laying down a perfect bunt down the third baseline, and if they're extremely slow, they still can beat it out.
And tying into that were the animations that often played out super slow without any sense of urgency that allowed players, whether bunting or taking an extra base or whatever it might be, or plays at first, you miss out on outs because your defensive players, your fielders, simply did not get rid of the ball with the urgency that they should have. Do you think that's been dealt with properly this year?
Yeah, that seems to be a little better. Though also because with the new ball physics and stuff, I've been playing better defensive players out there. So I wonder if that has more to do with it than that they fixed stuff. But all the animations and stuff look more fluid, and it looks like the guys actually do show a little bit more urgency when a fast guy's running, but they also kind of lollygag it when there's a slow guy running, and I get real worried sometimes.
I get nervous. I know exactly what you're talking about. I get nervous with that too. But so far I haven't. I remember last year, I'm sure on a podcast, I said something along the lines of every game, my opposition gets like 2 to 3 extra outs a game simply because of those issues. So I haven't seen that yet, which is encouraging. And again, though, we'll have to see if that carries over online also. Biggest improvements to gameplay. What have you noticed so far, Rich?
Well, I've noticed that I haven't had any concerns with gameplay. I'm struggled to hit out of the gate, and I don't know if that's because I'm rusty. I played a lot of MLB The Show, but relatively early in the year is when I sort of put it down. So it's been 2.5 months since I played the show regularly. So I really struggled hitting, especially my Road to the Show, because I created it. Go ahead.
Let's evaluate that here, Rich, for a moment. TJ, do you change any settings as far as like the hitting view or the type of hitting system you use to help yourself at the plate? Because I think I saw you streaming where you had a super zoomed in view of the of home plate, as opposed to being sitting back in like the default fisheye camera.
Yeah, I switched that late in MLB 16. So I kind of stuck with that now. I think it's offset. I believe the camera I use now is offset zoom. Hmm. So, but yeah, I used to use one of the wide ones that would give you like the whole, you'd see your whole batter's body. I used to do that mainly because I liked to see the swings and like the work they put into getting the batting stances right and the follow throughs and stuff right. But then I tried offset zoom and I feel like I'm playing a lot better. I can pick up the ball up a lot earlier.
Does it give you a little extra time to on the way to the plate?
Yeah, I feel like it. And especially with this year, I mean, I feel like if you just make contact and put the ball in play, I feel like there's a much bigger chance of getting a hit with the way the ball's like hooking and stuff. So
I'll tell you, I've noticed one thing I've noticed is that contact swing, I'm having more success actually getting base hits with contact swings. Mm-hmm. And that's a good sign, I think. And I think it probably is related to that. I've had a few hits where that happened where I was like, that would not have happened in the past. I had one looper that fell between charging infielder and outfielder that would surely have been caught in the past. And then I've had contact swings that resulted in home runs. I've had contact swings in doubles to the wall. Kind of cool to see that, because usually I'll just protect the plate with a contact swing, but I'm actually making getting some success out of it as well.
Contact or normal? You mean contact, normal, right? Just the
contact
the circle?
Swing. Circle, yeah.
Oh wow!
So I use that maybe like 10% of the time. Usually it's a normal swing. In a hitter's count, I might go for a power swing. But I've just found that the contact swings where I fall behind, number one, you have a pretty good opportunity of fouling balls off and getting the count back in your favor. But also, I've had far more success this year so far, actually getting positive results out of contact swings. So we'll have to see. Rich, do you use zone hitting? Or do you know what hitting you use, I guess? Is it just the default?
I don't know what hitting I use, but it's the kind where you control with your left stick, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Okay, so if that's zone, then yeah, then it's zone.
With the circle-y thing in the middle?
Yeah, but there's no interface with mine, so I don't like see it or anything like that. I think I have those turned off. For most of the visuals are turned off. Like I have the hot zones turned off. I've got almost everything turned off. I like to just focus on the pitch coming in.
Yeah, last year I played with directional for a long time, and I think that's the simplest way to play. But it's also was very limiting.
I don't like directional.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah, I think for newcomers that might be the way to go. But then once I switched back over to zone, my game kind of opened up. And so I've stuck with zone ever since and doing well.
I've always liked it. To me, it's how you play a baseball video game, right? Is when you're hitting, you sort of concentrate on an area, and the better hitter you have, the wider range he has in that area. And if you get your pitch, you hit it well, and off it goes. I mean, to me, there's some things that are, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And to me, that's one of those things. But again, it's impressive that they allow so many different options mm-hmm. for hitting and for fielding and for pitching. It's overwhelming, I think, for a lot of people. But what I think is also really cool that happened is whatever settings I had from last year's game seem to have just been there for me this year. I don't know if they read that and set it up that way, because I know I made a few slight adjustments, so it would seem weird if that were the case. But even so, I've had a hard time hitting, but I've gotten a little better. And it's but there's no gameplay that has stuck out to me. But that one of the reasons probably is because I don't use the contact swing, and I when on the one out of every 30 swings, the 10th one I use power, I never hit it. So I pretty much always use normal swing.
Yeah. Have you? So you said you probably don't have anything that stood out as problematic then at this point.
Correct. Not at all. Not at all. And that is the last time I had real problems with MLB The Show of any sort was 2 years ago with the outfield errors that would happen regularly, and with some problems I had with throwing the ball, you know, and the well-known, you know, if you hit it to the shortstop's backhand, you're never going to get the guy out at first base. Like, it's been a couple of years since I've had any, so I'm not surprised that I've not really had anything stand out to me. Visually, there's been a couple of weird things, but we'll probably get into that a little later.
Yeah. TJ, anything you've noticed in gameplay that's been bothersome at this point?
No, everything's felt pretty good. Yeah, nothing really. Hasn't been any real wonky stuff, but so far so good.
Yeah, I think that says a lot. That I have my page of notes so far for my review, and there's only like one thing on gameplay. It is because number one, it is familiar, and we're only able really to identify what stands out, and there, you know, besides the ball physics and the little things like the bunting that we were looking for. It's hard to really find a lot that that just jumps out at you. But that's a good thing in many ways, because it means that everything you liked about the game before, how well it played, how well it animates, all of that is still there. And the battle between the pitcher and the batter and the fielding all feel really good. So a lot of good there. Now... we have to, before we get to Diamond Dynasty, we have to talk about servers. Because this is an issue that affects not just Diamond Dynasty, not just online specific features, but also really the performance of the entire game of MLB The Show 17. And those who played MLB 16 at release last year will remember a similar outcome to the release, which was the servers immediately crashed, and essentially in the prime time hours of about 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time, the game was unplayable. And it wasn't just, again, online. It took 5+ minutes for the main menu to load. It took 5 minutes to get into any particular mode. It took minutes to get out of a game and back into another game. Because there's so much... We've talked about always online games. And the show isn't an online-required game. But when you are online, it connects to the servers far more times than you probably realize. The reason why the main menu gets so slow to load is because the first thing it's doing is registering your check-in on the server, your daily check-in, and your rewards. Every time you go into a franchise or Road to the Show game or exit it, it's registering your results and your rewards on the servers. Every time you make any change in Diamond Dynasty, it's contacting the servers. So that's why you get the slowdown throughout the entirety of the game and not just when you're playing online games. So We're at the point where online basically didn't work for the first 24 plus hours of MLB 17. And ever since then, what you've seen is, again, those prime time hours, the game slows down to a crawl. It makes it agonizing to try and do anything in Diamond Dynasty, assuming you're able to get into it. And it also causes other problems like results from games not registering and things of that nature when people actually play online. Because once you get into an online game, it runs pretty well, I think, although I've seen some reports of crashes and freezes. But the issue with not recording results is one that's devastating to me personally. I've already lost over 2 hours of time that I've played online games that didn't actually register and give me my wins and my may have gotten the rewards, I don't know, but it definitely didn't give me the wins, and that hurts in a battle royale, that hurts in a ranked season. So,
well, hey everybody, right before we get to the segment with the guys from Disc Jam, and it is great, you're gonna love it, I want to take just another moment and thank another one of tonight's great sponsors, Audible. You know, do you love books, but you find that you never have time to read them? Well, with Audible, get audiobooks and listen to those books that you've been meaning to read on the go. Their app is free, and it works on iPhones, iPad, Androids, and Windows phones. And you can also download and listen on your Kindle Fire and over 500 MP3 players. You know, with Audible, you own your books. Now, this is really interesting. So you can access your books anytime and anywhere right from your smartphone. But not only that, they've got the great listen guarantee. So if you decide you don't like the book you choose, no worries. You can exchange any book you aren't happy with for another title anytime, no questions asked. That's pretty amazing. That's like old school book, you know, libraries and bookstore kind of stuff. But with digital, it's kind of amazing. And, you know, it's funny. I drive like 5 hours, 6-7 hours a week. And so Audible has become a lifesaver to me. I've got a long commute, and you know, with my commute now, I just let the traffic crawl while my pulse races listening to a great book. And if you got a new commute or an old commute, doesn't matter. Just grab a seat and then hang on to the edge of it. You can't make more time, but you can make the most of it. So turn your commute into something more with a free trial at Audible. They have got so many great books. I'm actually finally wrapping up the Harry Potter series. It took me years, but I started using Audible, and I banged through the last three books in just a few days. So go to audible.com/pressrow to start now. And again, you're supporting the Press Row podcast, which we really appreciate. Go to audible.com/pressrow. Those clicks matter. The more that you support our sponsors, the more that we get to do the Press Row podcast. So once again, go to audible.com/pressrow and start now.
TJ, how have you been dealing with the servers in MLB 17? Because if you remember, MLB 16 took over 2 weeks before we started to see the issue start to fade away.
So when I couldn't get in at all, that's when I just ended up playing Road to the Show and stuff and had my fun there. I've mainly just been trying to work like the auction house a little bit, which is extremely painful when the servers are like this.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little bit of luck actually last night on like using the shownation.com rather than actually playing in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing that during our CFM draft, and that seemed to work out actually pretty well.
Yeah. The only time I've really been able to play has been in the middle of the night and early during the day, and then again it hits those prime time hours, and then I just don't even want to load the game up anymore, because what I want to do is get into Diamond Dynasty, work on my team, and even just navigating page to page is unbearable.
Yeah, that's why I've been doing most of the stuff that I can on the Show Nation that it'll let me. And I have a notebook of ideas because I know I can't do anything in the game for the most part. So it's just pretty much been that. I played I played a Battle Royale game that counted, and a couple Conquest games counted, but I'm pretty sure I beat a Stronghold and it didn't give me that.
Yeah, I've had similar. And those are kind of offline games, but again, it has to register the results with the servers. And then if it doesn't do that, I've lost a few of those too.
Yeah, and I've seen so many people complaining that I haven't really even tried to do the seasons because...
Well, it's scary. I don't know if I want to risk it.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's worth it right now.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. because after those 2 weeks last year, online was pretty good and the servers were pretty consistent for the show. But Rich, why do they have so many issues at launch for an extended period? I mean, we're not talking about, we see that with NBA 2K. Maybe it'll have a tough first day or first 2 days. EA nails online and their servers so well that the first days are a breeze for the most part with all of their sports games. But what's going on with the show here?
Well, EA is actually the exception because the bulk of AAA games, not just sports games, the bulk of AAA games have significant issues online on launch. I mean, this entire PlayStation 4/Xbox One era has been, I don't want to say has been defined by that, but that is certainly a common thread. I don't know what the infrastructure is underneath the MLB The Show online. You don't know if it's powered by, you know, their own internal stuff that they've completely built themselves. You don't know if it's all hosted on Amazon Web Services, or you don't know where and what it is. You would think that with the relatively rapid scalability that is available to organizations and even individuals these days would help. But it's so frustrating, and I feel bad for everybody. I feel bad for the fans, obviously, because they want to play. I mean, TJ took the day off and was going to be live streaming Diamond Dynasty all day and ripping packs. And
well, that's the thing, right? They promote a midnight launch and they get everybody excited for the first day, whether it's a midnight or they pick it up for the first day, and a large portion of the game, actually its most marketed feature now, or its most marketed mode, is completely inaccessible or just excruciating to even attempt to play.
Right, and so you feel bad for the fans. You know, you feel bad for, and at least I do, I feel bad for the guys who make the show who have nothing to do with this. Right. So many people, you know, have spent the past year just working like crazy to make this game. And then you feel bad, clearly, you know, and plus those guys, you know, they know that everybody wants to be playing Diamond Dynasty. They know they know how excited everybody is. And then, of course, you feel really bad for the guys who are actually trying to fix this stuff. I mean, you know, I've worked for 20 years in big tech, you know, with hosted solutions, and it's very complex stuff. But you've got to be able to figure out load balancing and stresses and loads. Like I say, you got to get it right. I mean, it's easy to say, and it's clearly hard to do because, again, MLB The Show is one of many, many, many games that struggles out of the gate. But we're at day three now, and things are better. Is that a fair assessment, or are they still struggling right now today, 3 days in?
Maybe slightly better. Maybe slightly better. But I
mean, tonight when I fired up the game, it took about a minute for the loading page to load because it was trying to hit the servers. But that wasn't 5 minutes. I remember, Brian, you tweeted a couple days ago that was 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, if it's a minute, it's getting better, right? So it's probably getting better. But again, I feel bad for everybody. I feel bad for everybody involved. Nobody wants this. You know, the online tech engineers, the last thing they want to be do is working all-nighters and all-dayers. You know what I mean? Like, everybody associated with the game doesn't want this to happen. It's a real shame.
Yeah, I've been asked by a few people on Twitter why this is, and basically they ask, do they even care?
Of course.
And my answer is, well,
they're losing a lot of money, so
even if you don't want
everybody cares.
Yeah, even if you don't want to believe that they have a passion for making sure everything is running properly, or that the execs even follow or care what's going on. They do because money's on the line.
They do especially because, not only because, but especially because this is how a lot of these guys are now paid and measured. A lot of the guys who work on this game, I'm sure, get significantly more money based upon the performance of things like Diamond Dynasty. That's just the way the world is now. So everybody cares. Everybody cares. And that just, to me, illustrates that a couple things. Number one, how hard it is, how really difficult it is to get this right. And B, how complex the underlying infrastructure must be. I mean, none of us knows the details about the code or anything here, but, you know, we've heard stories in the past. I mean, I know Owen wrote an article a couple of years ago where he was interviewing someone who had said, and granted, this is a couple, two or three years ago, but plenty of very old code is underneath a lot of these online services for these sports video games, you know, 2 and 3 console eras back. So it's not only complex to build, but it's complex to manage. It must just be really tough.
Let me tell you who I really feel bad for. That's our good buddy Steve Noah. Some people
he's the guy who turned off the servers in the first place.
Why is he tweeting GIFs when he could be fixing the servers? That's what I want to know.
Look, it's a very fair and valid point. I mean, why isn't he fixing the servers? Mm-hmm. Steve, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. But what's even more weird about this whole thing is that, like, if it was EA and it's 2K, it's like, I kind of understand, because they are, you know, third-party developers. They're not a Sony or Microsoft studio that's doing something. But this is a Microsoft studio that's having server issues. And if you look at Sony San Diego, all they do, aside from, you know, the not Diamond Dynasty part of this game, is online stuff. They have, I think that Guns Up game is a free-to-play online multiplayer game. They're coming out with Drawn to Death soon, which is, I think it was initially free-to-play shooter thing, but now they're going to charge for that. But I think that's mainly just an online shooter. I mean, I would be worried if I'm going to get one of those games knowing that this studio has these development problems. And it's not like this is the first year that this has been a problem with LB. I mean, this has literally been a problem since I can remember.
Yeah, going all the way back to when they started to have online, the show has struggled with. For many years, that was just head-to-head games that were awful and pretty much unplayable.
Yeah, then, me and Rich tried to play last night. We wanted to just play a game. And what, after like 15 or 20 times, we gave up. And then I had some friends tonight that were trying to play a game. I think after like 12 or 13 times, they finally got into one and played it through.
Mm. Yeah.
It's upsetting.
Yeah. Well, again, they've taken on a lot more than what they were doing originally. And as far as Diamond Dynasty goes, and as far as the online check-ins go, because you're getting rewards for everything you do pretty much throughout the entire game, there's a lot they have to deal with. And, you know, I don't know if last year it was just simply 2 weeks later there were fewer people trying to play at a given time or what. If that's what we're going to have to wait for again, I hope not. But we'll see. I want to get to then Diamond Dynasty, TJ, because we'll do a couple shows coming up, I'm sure, just on Diamond Dynasty. But, you know, there's been quite a few changes as far as if you go in and you didn't really know what had been done with Diamond Dynasty this year, you might be a little confused. You might be a little overwhelmed. And I'm curious to see what you thought when you started playing Diamond Dynasty again, at least the amount you've been able to play to this point.
Yeah, from everything I saw in the beginning, I was like, oh, they've added a lot of stuff, and it looks good, and I like everything that they're putting in and how everything's going to work. And then I get in, and it's just like, for someone like me that wants to do a lot of different stuff, all that stuff's there. But it's just a lot to try to navigate through. There's screens on screens on screens. And like last year when you could go into the collections and the missions and stuff, you know, you could just R1 and switch through different types. But now they're all in their own different submenu. Mm-hmm. It's a lot for me, and I want to do all this stuff.
You're the expert.
I can't imagine someone trying to just go in not knowing anything and getting lost.
That's a concern, because that has been something I've raised as far as Madden Ultimate Team and FIFA Ultimate Team. And one of the great benefits to the to Diamond Dynasty, in my mind, over the last 2 years, has been that it was the simplest as far as getting started and kind of understanding what you needed to do, where to go, kind of the goals you wanted to reach, and then the dealing with the marketplace and everything came kind of naturally as you advanced through it. And it's a lot, there's a lot more to it now. And besides just having everything move so slowly, and when you try to navigate through all that, like you said, all the missions kind of being separated, I'm still in my mind, I'm wondering, like, are there captains again or no?
No captains.
Okay.
There's one ticket store and the cards change every day, I believe.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that where I'm not even sure. I thought for a second you might say there were, because I don't know if I've dug through every menu in here. I've been bouncing back and forth between various sections of Diamond Dynasty. I don't know if that's going to be an issue for a lot of people, or if eventually, it'll seem a little more streamlined, but.
Yeah. And maybe when the servers are working, it'll be a little bit better, because you won't be taken, 20 seconds to go from one menu to another, or even longer than 20 seconds.
Yeah, I saw people saying that it took several minutes just to open a pack.
I actually didn't have any problems with the pack opening and stuff. But for me, it's been more just going through menus and all that stuff. But on the launch day when I was opening up packs, I really didn't have any problems with that.
The other thing I really liked about Diamond Dynasty was, I thought, besides being kind of the simplest of the team building modes, I thought it was the friendliest, as far as they give you a lot of stuff. They kind of help you along. You earned a decent amount of stubs through playing, through working the market. There were a lot of players that you could obtain that you like, just because you like. Because, like, for me, one of the first things I do is I go and get a couple Mariners for my team, so that I like them. I like my team a little bit more. So you can do that, and then you had things like Inside Edge, which boosted up everyday type of cards to higher levels. And it was another way to do that. And then post-game rewards that you get, things of that nature. Do you get a sense that they've changed at all? The friendliness, as I would say, of the mode, as far as what they're giving you, the balance within it, as far as what you're earning and what you're being awarded after you accomplish certain things.
Yeah, I've actually already gotten a gold post-game reward card, and I don't think I got one of those last year until, like, September. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like the post-game rewards and stuff are a little bigger this year. I haven't noticed the stubs, but I haven't really played a lot online, so I haven't seen that too much.
I don't know if they have, but my perception is that I'm earning fewer, and I wonder if that's why. To me, I looked at the marketplace, although your theory might be different as far as them changing the tiers or what ratings correspond to what tiers, but the marketplace looks like it's a lot. The prices of players are a lot lower than they were last year.
For the low guys, like specifically like silver and bronze, I feel like they've gotten a lot lower faster than I thought they were going to so far. Like I thought they would have been. I thought like silvers would be a couple thousand for a little bit, and then come down. But I feel like most silvers are a few hundred stubs, and it really depends on like who the player is. Like if it's somebody. I feel like the gap now, if silver is just, 80 to 84 now?
Yeah.
So I feel like if there's a card that's a silver and you think it's going to go up, those cards are still the ones that are, like 500 to 1,000 stubs right now.
Those are good investments.
Yeah, and those are good investments, which is why those ones are still keeping their value a little bit. But I feel like aging gold cards or guys that they don't think are going to stay up. Even the gold cards, I feel like, are a lot cheaper than they were last year. But then on the other side of that, I feel like the diamond cards are a lot higher priced now than they were last year.
Yeah, they're pretty rare at this point. The other thing I noticed, is, and I don't know if you've looked into it or not, but we've had the conversation, and I talked with Rich about it more last podcast, about the decision to make the handedness of the opposing pitcher a secret until you get into the game, right? And what impact that has on how people will put together lineups, what cards will be essentially seen as useless, and what cards will, you know, see their value skyrocket because people recognize that they're, especially when you're talking about batters that hit well from both sides of the plate. And I'll tell you, in browsing the marketplace, when I found batters that hit well from both sides of the plate, particularly mostly what you're seeing with contact, high contact ratings from both sides of the plate, they were like 2 to 3 times more expensive than the other cards. So I think what you're seeing already is a market that's recognizing certain players' abilities are more valuable than others. And I think that kind of hurts things already, because there's a lot of players I see that have good ratings from one side of the plate where I'm like, well, maybe I can throw them on my bench, but I can't start them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even right now, I set up a little tournament where we're just using like bronze cards and stuff. And knowing that I don't know what kind of handedness the starting pitcher is going to be, I've definitely built my rotation to have lefties and righties, but also my bullpen to have lefties and righties to be able to deal with whatever happens. And specifically, I'm noticing I'm building my lineup in a way where guys are pretty much equal throughout the whole thing. Yeah. But then I'll throw in like one guy that's really good against righties and one guy that's really good against lefties. Mm-hmm. And hope that pays off at some point.
Yeah. I just hope that doesn't get boring, because I really liked it last year, the ability to kind of build up a versus righty lineup and a versus lefty lineup, because there were the Saltalamacchias of the world that you could use against certain pitchers and you could not use against others. And we won't have that this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, and there's some positions where there's just not a ton of depth. Like catcher, I think there's one diamond and one. I think there's one diamond and one gold.
Yeah.
For the live series cards specifically. And I mean, Buster Posey's good against both, and I think LaCroix is actually better against lefties than righties. But then after that, I mean, and most of the time you want two catchers because the catcher's going to be a slow guy.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. It makes sense to have a catcher on your bench, so it would make sense to platoon them, but not knowing what that pitcher is kind of hurts that.
So yeah,
and in baseball, you know who the pitcher is that you're going to face. So
right. And the other thing it does is increase the value of. So I have third basemen who are rated much higher than a Pablo Sandoval, but he's in my lineup because he can hit from both sides of the plate. Mm-hmm. So I'm using a lower rated player simply for that balance. It's just, I don't know. I feel like it took a lot of strategy away.
Yeah. And that's going to be personal preference. I mean, if you have a guy that's like, the question is, would you rather have a guy that's 80 contact versus righties and 80 contact versus lefties? Or would you rather have a guy that's, you know, 90 contact versus righties, but only 70 or 65 against lefties?
Yeah. I would say take the first one.
Yeah. For me, I would go with the even guys. I feel like that would play better, but I mean, it's really up to the person playing. And I mean, for the most part, I think there's a lot more right-handed starting pitchers that are like middle of the road to very good. But then some of the highest end pitchers in the game are lefties. So you're going to definitely want guys that can crush those guys, too. So it's tricky.
Yeah. So who are the couple most exciting players you have on your team already?
So far, well, my loyalty reward was Michael Brantley, who was injured for the Indians last year, but actually had his card last year, and I used that for a huge part of the season. The number one card out there to get, definitely go get yourself a Starling Marte, the Pirates center fielder. He's got speed, got power, he's got contact, he's got an arm.
Cover athlete.
He's a cover athlete for Out of the Park Baseball. Is he a cover athlete?
Well, he was in a cover contest.
Oh. He was in the... Yeah, I don't think he won. Should have, because Starling Marte is amazing.
He is amazing.
I got him in one of my packs, and he was my team's first hit, the first stolen base, and first RBI. Sadly, he did not hit my first home run. Yeah, I would definitely get yourself specifically cards that I would focus on, like right now, like a Brandon Crawford at shortstop, because with
defense,
he's got super high defense, a good arm, and I feel like there's a lot more of those balls that you were talking about that are, you know, getting that are going to be like little bloopers that you're going to want a shortstop that can go out there and play defense, and you don't want a guy that's just going to be hitting to be your shortstop. And again, since there's not a ton of high-end catchers, I mean, there's who do I have? It's like Wilson Ramos. He's like an 84, but he's pretty solid all around. Mm-hmm. He can hit both sides, and he can play good defense. So yeah, for like catcher, short, center, I would look for the defense. Third base, probably look for defense too. With pop if you can. I know Millennium was looking at like the high ranking outfielders this year, and a lot of them have like 60 fielding.
Yeah, there's like the Nelson Cruz types of the world that I looked at, and I just can't deal with that in the outfield right now. I don't want to deal with that. So that's why I put speed and defense in my outfield. And there's like, same as last year, Kevin Kiermaier, great guy to acquire because he has, what, 99 defense and like 98 arm, or it's the other way around, either way. Mm-hmm. It's like, good luck with that. You're not getting anything by him. Save yourself an out or a run or something with him, as opposed to worrying so much about the hitting side. I would go with defense first. My other strategy right now is, and I was talking to you about this before the show, beef up your bullpen, and you don't need the top closers in the game to do that. Mm-hmm. What I did, I have a bullpen right now. They're all silvers, ranging from 80 with Will Smith to 84s. But these guys have hit per nine and strikeout per nine ratings that are in the upper 90s for the most part. And some guys have great velocity. Some guys have great break. I mean, like an A.J. Ramos, who's 94, 92, 99 break. And then you've got, there's just a lot of relievers you can find who are going to give you those type of ratings. And they're only between like 200, you can get them for like between 200 and 600 stubs. And so my advice would be to, first of all, beef up your bullpen, and you don't have to spend a lot of stubs to do it.
Yeah. Much like any other card collecting mode like this, definitely look past overalls,
right?
And look at specific stuff like that.
This was TJ. I was just gonna say, this was a big conversation I had with Dylan today, actually, where I was talking to him about how overalls are influenced by fielding stat for pitchers. Mm-hmm. We're talking about by the fielding stat and by the home runs per nine, right? Which don't actually matter,
especially,
really.
Yeah, especially in Diamond Dynasty, home runs per nine doesn't matter.
Right.
Because so, it's a simulation stat.
Right. So that's an interesting thing, is because you can look at these players and say, all right, what are the attributes that actually matter? And then go after the guys with those particular attributes rather than looking at the overall. And I would look at these silver guys who have 98, 99 for K per nine, for hit per nine, and say, well, I'm getting incredible value by stacking these guys in my bullpen.
Mm-hmm. And look for the things not only that matter, but what that matter to you.
Right.
Like, if you're looking for a guy that just mashes, that, I mean, don't worry about his defense, I guess. But like, there's certain guys like J.D. Martinez, who I was singing the praises of all last year. Right now, he has 85 contact versus righties, 81 contact versus lefties, 74 power versus righties, and 89 power versus lefties, which I think someone said, it's like, that sounds like a guy that should be an 89.
Yeah.
And a gold knocking on the door to diamond. He's an 84.
Oh, jeez.
And he's like less than, you can go put a buy order in now for less than 1,800 stubs and probably get him.
Yeah.
And he will play very good for you. I mean, his fielding's a 60, which isn't great. And his speed's only 50. But then that's when you have to get into like the next level stuff, is like, okay, well, if I'm going to have J.D. Martinez, I know he's going to be kind of a liability and not get to a lot of balls. Then I also need to go get a Kevin Kiermaier or a Billy Hamilton that's going to be able to cover the extra ground that I'm going to need.
Yep, or bring him in off the bench once you get a lead.
Right, because if you're going to face a lefty pitcher and you have JD Martinez come off the bench, that's huge.
Yeah. So, all right, so we're gonna talk a lot more about Diamond Dynasty. Obviously, we'll have dug into it more. We'll have better teams. We'll have kind of honed some strategies as opposed to the limited time we've been able to delve into the mode at this point. So we'll be getting to that in the coming weeks. Rich, let's bring you back in. I want to know, Rich. Is there anything that stood out kind of from the game so far this year then, like a favorite thing you've had happen or a favorite thing you've been able to do with the game so far?
Well, a favorite thing that I had happen was I had a huge eighth inning comeback in an early season game against the Marlins. I was down 6-3 in the eighth inning, and I came back and I scored 5 runs in that eighth inning and wound up getting the win. That was just fun. That's rare for me to be able to do something like that. I'm using dynamic hitting, so I think some of my struggles had dropped the hitting down a little bit, so that I'm sure influenced it, but I'm okay with that. It's what I needed at that moment. You know, I'm not setting I will after a while, but I'm not setting a default hitting or pitching. I think my pitching is set to veteran or whatever. But anyway, I'm dynamic at least for hitting. So that was really fun. I will say I don't have any technical information to back up this feeling, but in a sense I kind of feel like I'm not getting the most out of this game because I don't have a PlayStation 4 Pro. And this may have nothing to do with it, but I'm seeing a little bit of quirkiness and jumpiness in some of the visuals every once in a while, occasionally, that I don't recall seeing in the last few years. And I'm thinking it may be because there's even more sort of packed into it that the PlayStation 4 Pro might handle a little better. I've just been a little occasionally like jumpiness, or like I'll see a player in the background, zoom from the shortstop position, the second base as during like a little cut scene, like nothing major, nothing that influences the game. And I'm not talking about during the game. I'm talking in the little cut scenes isn't the right term, but you know what I'm talking about, right? There's a lot of, in between gameplay. I'm seeing some weirdness in there. And again, the reason I'm, cause I never saw it before. And I'm just thinking maybe because I have a launch day PlayStation 4 and not a PS4 Pro, maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe they're putting a little more in here with that. I don't know. But it's just, I haven't noticed that. Again, not a big deal. Doesn't reduce my enjoyment of the game. But it's a little less polished than maybe the last year or two. Maybe it just needs a couple more patches or something.
I've seen some of the things you're talking about, Rich. I'm not sure if the PS4 Pro actually solves that. I've read various impressions. I've had some tweets about it. TJ and I actually answered a few tweets about it today. And essentially it sounds like, because I don't have a PS4 Pro, that on the highest resolution, frame rate issues are even worse with the PS4 Pro when you're playing in 4K. So Kat had an article about this. Kat Bailey had an article, and I've seen a few other people mention it. So I suggested it was that you actually want to turn down the resolution, so you're not going to be playing at 4K, and then you turn up the frame rate option that they have for that, and you'll get a smooth game. It just won't be at the extreme higher resolution that you wanted, unfortunately.
Prior to release, I saw Millennium streaming it on his PS4 Pro in that ultra high frame rate mode, mm-hmm. which I think it's at 1080p, but you get the frame rate bump. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this looks really good, and I kind of want to get a PS4 Pro. And then I actually got the game, and I was like, I feel like what I saw from that was actually just like the smoother animations that are in the regular version. Mm-hmm. So I've actually been kind of okay with it. But yeah, as you said, there's three modes that are for the PS4 Pro. It's the ultra, I think it's called ultra high frame rate, but that's just 1080p and trying to do 60 frames per second all the time, I believe. And then there's another another mode where it's like 1440p, but I think you're still at 30 frames. And then there's the 4K mode, which I assume is at 30 frames, but they probably can't go any higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but if you think about it, like modern like PC games that want to play at native 4K at high frame rate, you're buying just a graphics card that's going to cost more than a PlayStation.
That's true. So. I did. I had to for my computer, so I know how that is. Yeah, TJ, what has stood out to you, kind of jumped out at you as a favorite thing or a favorite moment so far?
I don't know. I mean, I wish there were more moments to talk about. That's just been...
Sure.
I mean, that's been the most upsetting part right now is... that I can't have more moments to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Oh, I did have a nice moment where I did get to play my buddy Snaggle J in Diamond Dynasty. He ended up beating me, but I had a sweet play where George Springer made a nice diving catch in foul territory. That was kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
But actually, there was one last night I had. I threw a pitch inside. Somehow the batter hit it. It essentially hit the grass in foul territory, like, you know, there's the line, the dirt, and then the grass.
Right.
It hit that grass, but it had so much spin on it that it ended up coming back into fair territory and making a play on it. Oh, yeah. That was
ball physics, huh?
Yeah, I think those ball physics are a real game changer this year.
And those are the things that typically only really start to be noticed when you play for a week, a couple weeks, two or three or four weeks. Like, there's a lot of subtlety and nuance to the show. There has been for years. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's a couple little times I've noticed that, but I with the ball physics, but yeah, that's going to unveil itself, I think, over the long haul. And I mean that in the best way possible.
Yeah, so for me, it's the Ken Griffey Jr. stuff, right? As a Seattle guy, I grew up watching Griffey. I grew up going to games. So it's pretty cool to have him represented in the game, not just in the game, but the way they kind of treated him and his legacy with respect, and being able to get his rookie card in Diamond Dynasty, and in one of my first games, robbing a three-run home run with a leap over the wall with him. Was pretty cool. Also going into the home run derby and seeing that he wears his hat backwards in the home run derby.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome kind of little touches that you see Griffey related. A lot of people pointed out he's wearing his signature shoes also. And then in like franchise mode, just for fun, I went in and I had to like cut and trade away everybody on the Mariners to do it. But I put Griffey Jr. and Griffey Sr. in the outfield just to play a game. Kind of neat. So there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with that. And just as a huge fan of Griffey, it's one of those kind of special things that you rarely get to experience as a fan of one individual. And I think they did a really good job with him. So
very similar to what NBA did with the Jordan Challenge and the Legends Challenge, which for my money remains my most fun experience in a sports game, is because those big personalities stand out so well, and it's wonderful to see. And it's cool, especially that someone like you, Brian, is a longtime Griffey fan and a Mariners fan. It's very specific. Like, obviously everybody loved Ken Griffey Jr., but particularly his big fans, to be able to experience him in a modern setting, right? We all remember Ken Griffey baseball from a long time ago. But that's just really cool. And again, those kind of things really work beautifully for me. I'm a big fan of history, and the care and love that went into getting Griffey and his likeness and his attributes into the game, as well as a lot of the Hall of Famers and the legends. Sure, it's just, yeah. I love that so much about the show. I love that so much about NBA 2K. The other series don't really have that, but NBA and the show do the legends spectacularly.
Yep. All right. So I think that'll do it for this episode. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, we'll be back next week with a full panel. We'll have like 7 or 8 experts, reviewers, YouTubers, streamers, everything you can think of on to talk about everything.
Thieves. Thieves, miscreants, you name it.
Yeah, as usual. So we'll hit on everything in the game next week. Have a really extensive discussion. Thank you, Rich Grisham. Thank you, TJ Lowerman, again, for coming on, spending the time to talk about MLB The Show 17, our first impressions. And thank you to listeners out there. Hope you'll be back with us next week as we talk about MLB The Show even more. Take care till then.